ruled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio.
Hey everybody, you're here with Roadkill Radio. I'm Carrie Simpson.
And I'm Mark Hashik.
And we have a big show today, Mark, as always, but this is going to be a really important show, and I'm very excited about this. I mean, I'm actually up for this show. I want to be really up for this show, baby.
Really up for it.
Really up for this.
Well, as you know, Carrie, our Supreme Court, our overlords in black robes, in September, late September of this year, just a couple months ago, they blessed InSight, our supervised injection site in Vancouver, so it will remain open in perpetuity, at least for the foreseeable future, which means party time.
Oh, yeehaw, baby.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do next?
Well, I don't know. You had a good idea about a possible ecstasy site.
Oh, let's go and let's establish it. We can get government funding for it.
We could. Do you have any names in mind? And where do you suggest we put this? Maybe a big tent somewhere in the middle of a school zone.
You know what, Mark? Wait, you've just inspired me. I think this is great because we know if we can get the youth on board, there'll be lots of government funding for one thing. I mean, right. You know, having habits and wanting the government to support us, we know that's good for at least a couple $1 million.
Correct.
But wait, if we get the youth involved, how about a youth event? Emphasis on the E. We can just go drop E, baby.
I think it's a great idea because what you want to do is you want to get E users when they're young to show them how to safely eat ecstasy, and what happens when the body overheats. They need to know that when they're 14, 15 years old, because once you hit puberty, ecstasy can be an even more dangerous drug.
Well, and let's face it, we can have safe supervision of these kids that are tripping out on E. This is great. You know, we'll be able to reduce maybe teen rape and all kinds of other benefits that'll flow from this, Mark.
Right.
I mean, this is just brilliant. We need to do this. I bet this is worth probably $500 million. I mean, right across Canada we can do this.
Well, let's get the Roadkill people on it.
Yeah.
Our producers. They're always up for stuff like this. So we'll get them on it.
But wait a minute. Maybe we should have that meeting down at Let's Inhale Crack, you know, because I hear they're going to be giving us an ability to do that, too. And while we're at it, you know, I think it's time that we start paying for these drugs, Mark. I mean, really, think of the poor people that can't afford it. Think of the crime that would be reduced if the government just started supplying everybody with this.
Now, I know you're being ironic here.
Am I?
Yes.
Not me.
Yes. And our next guest, our guest today, knows a little something about irony. He's a very funny guy, but he's
not the guy that wants to ruin all our fun and say, you know, these safe injection sites aren't really good for people.
He's a bit of a grouch.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He will rain on your parade. Our guest is David Berner. He's a long-time journalist. Long-time radio guy, long-time print guy. He's done a lot of stuff, actor, everything. But he's also spent over 40 years in the field of addictions and addictions recovery. He founded an amazing recovery facility that still operates today in Winnipeg. He can tell us a little bit about that. And he is also, and David can correct me on this, the executive director, I believe, of the Drug Prevention Network of Canada. And he is a strong critic of the harm reduction policies that have blossomed in Vancouver and elsewhere around the country, where addiction is managed by enablement, essentially, and InSight being the premier example of this, where struggling addicts are able to purchase either heroin, cocaine, other drugs on the street, enter this facility in downtown Vancouver, shoot up under the watchful eye of nurses paid for by the taxpayer, and then leave. And this is the extent of really the InSight procedure. David, are you with us?
I'm with you, and you know, really, InSight is old news. I have an exciting news break for you folks on the same wavelength. I've just finished with negotiations with three levels of government, federal, provincial, and Richmond Steveston, And we're in a private, a public partnership with Ford Motor, and we've acquired a site down by the docks, which normally would go to condo developments, but in this case, it's a two-acre site, and Ford has agreed to put new cars, stock this site with new cars. And the catch is they're leaving the keys in the car, and there's a, just a little sign at the entryway. You're only allowed to steal one car a day.
so it's a harm reduction program for car thieves.
Yeah, and it's very we're excited about it because, hey, and it only costs $400 million a year.
Oh, this is good news, David. I'm really excited. You know, maybe we can use one of those cars to go to our e-party.
And I want to tell you about my cousin, Eddie. His daughter was self-mutilating.
Yeah?
So Eddie, in the interest of harm reduction, thought he'd help sharpen her razors for her.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Did Eddie supervise?
No, he had medical staff supervising. He had nurses and doctors who might otherwise be helping people with osteoporosis and cancer.
Minor details. Yeah.
David Berner, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be here all week. His 10 o'clock show gets a little blue. David, it's been 2 months when this show airs, roughly, since the Supreme Court blessed Insight.
Yeah.
And I've had some time to think about it. I know you have. Give me your initial response as someone who's studied these issues and been involved for years in Insight, in Vancouver, harm reduction, all that stuff. What does this decision mean, in your opinion, to Vancouver and to drug recovery in BC?
Well, it's a huge step backwards, of course, but it was predictable. Supreme Court Justice Beverly McLaughlin, who is, I think, is the only person who said anything publicly, said, Insight saves lives, the proof is there. She was wrong on both counts. She based those comments on information on a study that was published in The Lancet, the prestigious medical journal, and that study has proven to be worse than flawed. It's like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. It's so full of holes, it's absurd. First of all, the study that claims that Insight saves lives was done by the very people who built Insight and have promoted it. Mm-hmm. That's not how science works, boys and girls. Science looks at examining what is and tries to discover the truth about reality. Only large pharmaceutical companies go out to prove that their product works with bad science, and this is exactly what these guys did. Now, a study has since come out of Australia that has shown that, in fact, there have been more overdose deaths in the neighborhood, in the downtown east side, since Insight began, and that the study sampling is bad and practically all of their methodology is bad. And if the Supreme Court had looked at this report, they might not have been so assured. What has happened is that a lot of otherwise reasonable people have some hate on for the current Prime Minister, Mr. Harper. And they want to characterize it, they want to demonize Mr. Harper as the devil. And so, you know, I have friends who are bright people and good writers and journalists who write editorials that say Insight saves lives and Harper's the devil for not supporting it.
Right.
But they're completely wrong on this count. Now, what does this decision mean? It means that harm reduction, which is the largest force in the world today in response to addiction issues, by the way, other than 12 steps. 12-step programs are probably the largest force, but the problem that harm reductionists have with 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Emotions Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, the problem that harm reductionists have with 12 steps is there are no presidents, there's no recording secretaries, there's no treasurers, there's no money. It's just 30 people meeting in a church basement or a community hall saying, hi, my name's Bob, I'm an alcoholic, and getting clean and sober. And that baffles doctors, academics, politicians because nobody can claim any glory for it.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get back to, because this is so important, the study regime that was put together by the Insight people is the reason why Insight exists, and it's the reason why the Supreme Court did what it did. And people need to understand what it's all about. The research that has been used to justify Insight's existence has been solely compiled by Insight advocates. The people who lobbied before Insight in 2001, 2002, Insight opened in 2003, the people that lobbied for an injection site in Vancouver were the ones that were given $1.5 million contract from Health Canada to prove its effectiveness. Now, like you said, David, that seems wholly unscientific to me. And I'll say one more thing about the unscientific nature of these reports. They have compiled, Thomas Kerr and his friends at UBC and at Vancouver Coastal Health have compiled dozens of studies about Insight, and every one of them has shown a positive outcome, so-called scientific outcome, for Insight. That doesn't pass the scientific smell test, and I don't have a PhD. I can even understand that. So the people need to know that the court decision was based on this study regime and nothing else, because there hasn't really been other organizations don't have the funding to counter years and years of studies like these guys have been able to do, and that has been something that has been almost ignored in the media. The biggest beef I have is the way the media in Vancouver and in Canada has looked at Insight. They ignore the fact that the Insight guys are responsible for the studies. They ignore the fact that they come out with 100% positive outcomes. And they ignore the fact that something that's peer-reviewed, the Insight guys always point to the fact that their stuff gets peer-reviewed. Peer-reviewed does not equal gospel truth. In fact, many prestigious medical journals like The Lancet or the New England Journal of Medicine often publish studies simply to spark debate and to attract readership. It doesn't mean that the entire medical community has blessed Insight. It doesn't mean that at all. So that's been very frustrating to me.
Look, you know better than I, Mark, that the media is comically lazy, is tragically lazy. Pharmaceutical companies employ large PR firms who I worked in Toronto in the advertising PR business for several years, and I know I'm very familiar with marketing PR companies that work exclusively in the pharmaceutical and medical fields, and pharmaceutical companies employ people to write wonderful gooey treacly pieces about their latest discovery, whatever, right, wherever that may be. It's often something old that they had on the back shelf, but they can remarket it as something new, and they send it to the newspapers and so on, and the newspapers just print it whole and under the heading science.
Unbelievable.
They don't question it. But let me give you some hard facts. Sure. Look, data from BC Coroner's Office shows 49 illicit drug deaths in 2002. Now, here's the rest of the years after Insight. 51, 67, 55, 54, 56. So drug deaths, in fact, were up. Further to that, here is the 2008 Expert Advisory Committee from Ottawa that evaluated Insight for the Canadian government.
Yes.
It calculated that Insight saved 1.08 lives per year, one life per year, at a cost of $3 million per year. Now, let me just hold on that for a second. My dear friend Jean Duché, who runs the Behavioral Health Foundation of Manitoba, runs an operation that has 136 beds and a six-month waiting list, and she's turning out clean and sober citizens every day, people who are matriculating in their high school and their universities, reuniting with their families, okay? Her program for 136 people at any given moment costs $6 million a year. Insight costs $3 million a year and apparently saves one life per year, okay? The Supreme Court absolutely ignored all of this information. But you know better than I that we are stupid people and we only like to watch and absorb headlines. That's what, how else can you explain USA Today as a newspaper?
Well, listen, that the expert advisory committee that you mentioned, which was done by Health Canada in 2008, also said that less than 3%, I think it was 2.7% of Insight users are referred to long-term abstinence programs.
Before you get to the referrals, less than 10% of users use Insight.
Right.
Okay? Only 5% of all drug injections in the downtown East Side take place at Insight. And then, sorry, go on. What did you say about
less than 3% of Insight users are referred to long-term abstinence programs, but yet every press conference that Insight stages, they have a recovering addict as if that is the reason why Insight is in existence.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, if you've ever looked at those press conferences, the recovering addict is absolutely stoned. I've never seen one of these poor, sorry bastards that wasn't a complete, total user.
Right.
You know, at the moment that they're being held up as some shining example.
But David, I want to pick up on that because I think the implications of what's gone on here, and I'm coming, a lot of my work deals with young people.
Yes.
What message are we sending to the youth of Canada when the Supreme Court starts saying that this is a good thing? I mean, most of us as diligent parents say, you know, use your brain, stay away from drugs, and thank God, you know, I was able to navigate 4 kids through this insane world without any drug and alcohol issues. But, you know, that was because there was a very clear, firm line. This is not acceptable behavior.
You know, I agree with you completely. You know, we had a terrible shift, a terrible sort of social policy shift that started to happen about 30 years ago. When I started the first residential treatment program in Canada 45 years ago, a cop on the beat, if he or she saw a youngster, you know, 12, 14 years old, wandering around downtown, would walk over and say, "Hey, what's up? What are you doing? Where do you have a family? Do you have an address? Are you mad at your mom? Did you have a fight with your dad? Is there abuse at home? Do you want to lift home? Something, okay?"
Yeah.
But then a public policy shift happened very quietly. And we started to give, I'm not making this up, this is what people don't think about. We started to give 12-year-old girls $400 a month to stay in a flea bag hotel downtown if they so chose.
Oh, it's up to $1,000 now for independent living, David. I mean, this is a gold mine for kids, right?
Yeah, so a child who could have a bad day with their parents and who hasn't, you know, as children we've all had bad days with our parents, and as parents we've all had bad days with our children, that's called life, can head downtown for fun and excitement and be relatively innocent, you know, but get caught up in the life, and this happens all the time, but nobody will now interfere, thanks to Pierre Elliott Trudeau's charter and privacy rights. We now have this wary, hands-off, gloves-on fear of saying anything to anybody, but especially a youngster, that might be construed as invading their privacy. So the message, you're right, the message we are now sending to young people is do anything, do what you want. You have a right to be an idiot. You have a right to abuse yourself. You have a right to hurt yourself. You have a right to live a lousy life. You have a right to live in alleyways and live like some sort of a wild animal. You have a right to abandon civilization. You have a right to abandon your best self. The problem, one of the many, many problems with something like Insight is that it doesn't even begin to address the humanity. All it deals with is a substance. You know, in all the years I've been involved in addictions treatment, and I'm still involved, I've never once spoken to any addict or alcoholic about their poison of choice, because that's irrelevant. The alcohol or the heroin is nothing. It's the spirituality, it's the emotional life, it's the psychological life, it's the social interactions, it's who your friends are, it's how you spend your time. It's got nothing to do with this crap. So the people, there are people who try to ameliorate something like insight, and they say, you know, David, at least this provides, you know, a temporary way to interact with addicts and maybe help them possibly get into treatment. And I say, that's bullshit. Why would you do anything halfway? Why not just say to addicts, hey, you want to get out of this life? Let's go. We'll go do it. We'll get you out of this life. You know? And yeah. Either get out of this life or don't.
Yeah.
But why would you know, the question I always ask everybody, and I've had very hostile interviews from the media since the Supreme Court, by the way. I've had talk show hosts and so-called journalists yelling at me. They ask me my opinion. I give them my opinion. They start yelling at me, and I say, what did you ask me on the program for?
Right.
You know, I always ask them, would you knowingly cross the street to give a drunk a clean shot glass? And they say no. And I say, well, explain insight to me.
Well, and insight also makes claims, again, that they are the first contact for people on the street, and that they counsel people and help them into rehabilitation. How, as you know better than me, it's very difficult to counsel somebody when they shoot up.
Mark, yes, absolutely. First of all, yeah, that's a good point, but I want to go to a second.
Yeah.
Yes, I have never in my life, in 45 years being involved in this issue, I have never once talked to someone who's stoned or drunk. You cannot talk to someone who's stoned or drunk because you're not talking to a human being. You're talking to a chemical.
Right.
You know, there's nothing to say. And think about this. You spoke about your children. Let's say your child gets up at 2 in the morning. I'm talking about a 4-year-old. Your child gets up at 2 in the morning and says, I want a cookie. So let's look at a useful strategy to that. You give the child a cookie and say, okay, but I'll never give you another one. Okay, but this is, I'm satisfying your cookie, Jones, but after this, sweetheart, there's no more. Is that a reasonable strategy? No.
Not in my house, David.
No, exactly. You wouldn't do that. No self-respecting, reasonable parent would do something like that.
You would just say,
I'm sorry, baby, we're going back to sleep.
Forget self-respecting. If you love that child, you
exactly.
That's what that's about. And you don't cater to every whim and every want and every desire.
So do we love the addicts that we're giving free heroin to and free crack pipes to and free places to shoot up? Do we love them? No, we don't.
Okay, but David, let's talk about then what's really going on here. And you know, it's the same mentality about making government bigger, making more demand for our tax dollars, because there is an industry attached to this that I think is the real reason. Those are the people that are feeling loved right now. All the people that have made job creation at the expense of these poor people who could be freed from their vices and their bondages and all the hell that they're in. But these people, through their compassion and their, you know, bleeding heart approaches to these things, are also making a hell of a lot of money off of us taxpayers to facilitate this facade.
We had coffee a couple of weeks ago with a man who's the principal of a huge philanthropic foundation, and he said, one of the things I'm discovering and I'm saying to all of these people is, you all have an executive director earning six figures. You all have accountants. You all have all this administrative foo-fura. Start sharing some of your administration costs, and we'll give you some money. But as long as you keep having this huge infrastructure that costs a fortune, we're not going to support you. And you're absolutely right. It's a gigantic industry. Look, one of the things that is just absolutely a fact of life Mark, you attended a conference of prevention and treatment providers back in June, and you saw people who represented about 25 different social service agencies who are involved in real treatment and prevention, and every one of them said and can tell you they've never had a client from Insight, not one. So when Insight says we refer people to treatment, my question is, where? Who? But, show me one clean addict.
But, David, that's all going to change because now we've just been given an injection to expand the whole Insight insanity. And now the rationale, I can just hear it. But if we would just have five or six more facilities, we could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you raised that because that's I was going to say in the very opening, Mark's opening question of what do you make of the Supreme Court decision. I mean, the worst thing about it is that it is now a license to breed insights. I'm not a big fan of the current mayor of Vancouver, but at least he has said publicly, no, originally he said we need four or five insights, which showed how little insight he had, but he now has said, no, we're not going to do that. But let me point out that the previous mayor of Victoria, Alan Lowe, at one point, only a few years ago, was promoting the idea that Victoria needed four insights. Fortunately, they don't have any so far. But they needed four, he said, and he wanted one of them to be mobile. In other words, the insight van that's coming to your neighborhood. And I would tell that to lunch groups that I would give speeches to, and then I would look at them and I'd say, by the way, are you availing yourself of the wonderful opportunity of the osteoporosis clinic that drives to your neighborhood on Thursdays? They'd look at me like I was crazy, and I'd say, okay, I'm sorry. What about the cancer clinic, the mobile cancer clinic? Are you using that one? And they'd look around the room, and I'd say, of course not, because they don't exist. We have an aging population, all of whom have cancer and osteoporosis, not all, but so many of, and we're not sending mobile clinics to the hoods for that, but we're going to send clean places for a handful of addicts to shoot up. We're going to go out of our way to service addicts? Are we nuts?
Okay, David, and on that note, because I just because the Supreme Court of Canada comes down and gives us a little spanking because we're harsh, cruel people that want people to be healthy and whole and feel loved and productive lives. I know we're a real nasty lot around here.
And we are told we are not compassionate. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. Those of us who want addicts to get clean and sober, and we know most of them can be because we've seen it and we know them, we really are compassionate, and those who want to give people opportunities and ways to remain stupid have no souls, as far as I'm concerned.
But that's all about the media narrative, isn't it? I mean, because the media drives this. Critics of Insight and other harm reduction policies are portrayed as caricatures, mired in the Stone Age, knuckle-dragging Neanderthals in favor of some kind of theocracy or something like that. It's absolutely ridiculous.
But you know what, David? I want to, because drugs, of course, are starting to touch everybody's life. In my work with advocacy, helping families that have their kids apprehended and that kind of thing, we deal with this often, and you know, when families come to me, I'm like, you don't bother chatting with me or wasting my time. I won't deal with a bottle, I won't deal with a chemical, I won't deal with a drug. But families now are being affected. I mean, crack, cocaine, meth, all of this stuff is just so rampant in our own family. I mean, we've had coke addicts, but they didn't get sent off to a treatment plant that would, you know, just inject them slowly with whatever. It was cold turkey, and I'll tell you, those programs worked. To watch the miracle of transformation within the lives of so many people, because as family members, you get to go. This the facility that this individual went to was over in Nanaimo Cedars.
Right.
I don't even know if it's still going. Amazing facility, zero tolerance for everything. And to watch, and what touched my heart going to these visits with this family member were the amount of young people, David. We are selling these young people a bill of lies with this nonsense. And fortunately for these kids, there were family members, because these are not cheap adventures. This is like $10,000 a pop to get your loved one clean.
Yep.
You know, what's happening to all the rest? I would much rather be spending my tax dollars helping people who want to become truly healthy lives worth living. And as you say, the young people, from the breakdown of family, the tragic situations that these kids were involved in, to the father of, you know, six kids who didn't make it, right?
Yes.
You know, and then to the other family members we've have now, because, you know, the wife and husband are both into crystal meth and smoke and crack and all the rest of it, and their whole multi-million dollar roofing business gone down the tubes, and we're in sitting at their kitchen table because, you know, there's kids involved here. And I looked at the wife in this situation. I said, "Do you love your kids more than the drug?" And she looked at me with tears in her eyes, and she said, "No." She needed her drugs more than her kids at that point in time.
You know what? You've hit on one of the absolutely crucial moments in addiction work. Do you love your kids? I mean, I could do 2 hours about that subject. I cannot tell you how many times I've said to individuals or to groups of people, it's your child or the box of beer. It's your child or the pipe. We had a very, very dramatic moment in the Winnipeg program just a year and a half ago when I was running a workshop. And this guy said, you know, I keep choosing my pipe instead of my daughter. And I said, okay, where is your daughter? I was thinking he was going to say she's in Calgary or something, and we do a little psychodrama on the phone. And he said, she's right there. And it was his daughter. This is a man in his 40s. His daughter, who's about 15, was in the audience just a few feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought them up, and they just stood there holding hands and weeping. I mean, they couldn't speak. They couldn't even articulate the pain, you know. And what do you think happened? All around me, other people started sobbing. And, you know, I turned to one guy and said, "Glenn, what's the matter? What are you responding to?" He says, "David, this is what I've done with my son for years."
Mm-hmm.
We are dealing with a horrible loss of dignity. We're dealing with a horrible tragedy. We're dealing with a human situation. And to think that needles and clean crack pipes and antiseptic rooms in which to shoot can be of any service to that human situation is so short-sighted. Look, let me say something that I always have to say in these conversations. The people who created Insight, and by the way, I applaud everything you just said about the tragedy and the range of impact that drugs are having. The people who created Insight don't understand, manage it, don't understand the mechanics of addiction. And I'm going to say what the mechanics of addiction are, because it's very simple. You ready?
Mm.
Addicts want more. That's all. Addicts want more. They don't want library cards. They don't want tickets to the Canucks games. They don't want tickets to the opera. They don't want a bicycle. They don't want a digital SLR camera. They don't want more channels for their TV set. They don't want painting equipment. They don't want a horse. They don't want a dog. They don't want children. They don't want insurance. You know what they want? They want more drugs.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Addicts want more drugs. Dope fiends shoot dope. Drunks drink. Why is this concept so difficult for people to understand? Dope fiends shoot dope. Drunks drink. It's not very complicated. Every dope fiend knows this. Every drunk knows it. Anybody who's worked in real rehab knows this. So you can give an addict a clean, well-lighted place to shoot at 10 a.m. That's fine. Go ahead. It's irrelevant. You know why? Because addicts want more. Mm-hmm. So at 2:15, Betty or Bob Dope Fiend is back in the back alley using dirty water and dirty needles with the only camaraderie he knows, other dope fiends. And every cop on the downtown east side will tell you that this is the daily reality.
Yeah, it's just...
So it's a complete waste, aside from the fact that it's evil and it's counterproductive and it's counterintuitive, it's a total waste of time and money.
Hmm.
Okay, now speaking of money, and Carrie touched on it, she mentioned how expensive it is to send somebody to some of these programs anyway, the abstinence-based programs.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of time here bashing Insight. If David Berner was elected king of Vancouver and British Columbia, being the expert that you are, what would you do? What solutions would you create? What would happen in Vancouver, say?
I would do two things. I would put some more money into some of the wonderful, very low-cost prevention programs. I just give you an example. There's a wonderful woman out in the Tri-Cities area named Diane Soden, who runs a program called Children of the Street.
Yep.
She just does phenomenal work, and her people do phenomenal work. And she does, I don't know, 600 or some, or is it 6,000? I can't remember. But many, many presentations in schools every year. I would give people like her, and she's not alone. There are a handful of others. I'd give them a few more resources. They don't need millions. They don't need a fortune. But I'd let them breathe a bit and let them expand, and let's do more prevention. Let's make public statements to kids that dope is stupid and dangerous, and there's got to be a better way to live your life. Carrie talked about an expensive program on the island. It's true that there are private, for-profit, treatment programs, which are, perfectly good, but some of them are very expensive. Mm. But there are many, many treatment programs that, cost the client nothing, but they cost, the government or somebody, something. And they are extremely cheap. They're extremely reasonable. I talked about the program in Winnipeg. Costs $50,000 a year per bed. I mean, that's comically cheap, because out at the thing that was reported in the press yesterday, what's it called? Mental Health and Addiction Center out in,
right,
I guess it's the former Riverview or wherever it is.
Yeah, well, the old Riverview site out in
yeah. So that, I mean, that's like $250,000 a year per bed, compared to nonprofit treatment programs, which are $50,000 or $60,000. I would put more money into those kinds of programs and encourage them to be able to scoop more people, get more people out of courts and off the street and so on. So that's what I would do if I were king. I would certainly close Insight. I would never consider anything that. I have to tell you that even when the idea of Insight first came along, I was shocked. It flies utterly in the face of everything I understand. So that's what I would do. Now you would say, well, okay, that's fine, but what about the people who won't recover? Well, then they have to deal with the consequences of, you know, using an illegal drug and breaking the law.
That's what people aren't willing to accept, I think, that that's life, that it's not an easy thing to say, well, you know, 40%, and I don't know the numbers like you do, David, but that this percentage of addicts is not going to be able to get into a certain place in their life because they're not ready at that time or whatever. It's just an ugly thing, but you can't accommodate everyone in this situation, can you?
No, you can't. One of the shocking and terrible mistakes that this mental health and addiction place that was on the front pages yesterday or the day before has made is they discovered they're dealing with the most difficult mental health and addiction people from the downtown east side. And imagine, they're shocked that they discovered that some people can't be cleaned up in 3 months or 6 months and they need permanent accommodation.
Oh, imagine that.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. Some people are so injured, so destroyed, that they need permanent but loving, humane, and firm accommodation. So that's the reality. And some people aren't going to make it anywhere, okay?
Right.
Some people are going to die on the street. Some people are going to be arrested by the police. Years and years ago, addicts, I used to do a public speech called The Shopper's Drug Mart of Therapy. And my point of that speech was that when I first started in the business, addicts who are people who are lousy at making choices, right?
Yeah.
They're not good choice makers.
No.
They used to have very few choices. You could score, you could overdose, You could be choked to death by a narco cop, which happened often. You could be imprisoned, in which case you'd either have more drugs or no drugs, depending on how the flow was going that week in the prisons. And that was the reality, okay? Then all of a sudden, everybody and his aunt decided we were going to help everybody. And all of a sudden, there are hundreds of crazy choices for addicts, 99% of which don't do anything. Let me say one other thing about being king for a day. Yeah. One of the most evil things that's happening because of harm and through harm reduction, a few years ago, the former mayor, Sam Sullivan, mm-hmm. called
former
a meeting.
Vancouver mayor, Sam Sullivan.
Sorry?
Former Vancouver mayor, Sam Sullivan. Yeah,
former Vancouver mayor, Sam Sullivan, called a meeting of program directors to the hotel across from City Hall, and asked me to come, and I went sort of under protest. I didn't really want to go, but I didn't see the point. But anyways, I went, and he wanted to show us his new program where he was going to give addicts substitute pills. So two things happened that were shocking and stunning. One was that he had his then drug czar, a guy who earned $100,000 a year at City Hall for several years under him and Larry Campbell. He had him sitting up there, and then he had this other guy that he was paying $100,000 a year to, who was going to run this fatuous program of giving addicts pills. This guy actively said in plain English to an audience of people, treatment doesn't work. And he said it several times. Treatment doesn't work. And Sam Sullivan personally had a very personal and sick viewpoint that addicts were like he. He said that he skied under someone's legs when he was 19 and broke his neck. And so he lay in a hospital bed feeling sorry for himself, and one day he figured out that it was time to stop feeling sorry for himself, and he had to accept he was a quadriplegic, and he had to go on and do things with his life. And he did, and good for him. A very admirable, very amazing journey, and we can all be proud of him for that. But then he made this weird intellectual leap, and he said, but I'm just like an addict. If someone had walked into my hospital room when I was lying there paralyzed and said, arise, my son, you will walk one day, that's the cruelest, stupidest thing they could have said. I had to deal with the reality. And he believes that addicts are the same. And addicts can never arise and walk. They'll always be addicts, and therefore we have to give them drugs. Here's the problem with that. Aside from the fact that it's wrong, it's not the same situation, aside from the fact that many hundreds of thousands of millions of addicts do, they remain addicts because they know who they are, but they don't drink or shoot drugs. Many, many addicts recover. Aside from that, I lost my train of thought because I took myself on a tangent.
No, yeah, what you're saying is, the Sullivan regime is crazy. That's basically what you're saying.
Yes, here's the thought. Sorry. aside from the fact that it's wrong, let's take the case of a 14-year-old girl who's an addict and is renting out body parts by the half hour. That's called prostitution.
Yeah.
It's not called a sex worker.
Right.
It's not... I'm not interested in unions of sex workers.
She's not commercially sexually involved, which is the new phrase they use in the downtown.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Well, see
what you learn on Roadkill Radio.
I call it prostitution. Yeah. Anyway, so let's say you have a 14-year-old girl who's an addict and she's a prostitute. So Sam wants to give her substitute pills. In other words, he wants to keep her drugged. In other words, He's promoting slavery. He wants to keep that 14-year-old girl imprisoned in her life of prostitution. Now, look, I personally know hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of former prostitutes who are no longer prostitutes. Because when we worked with them, we said, how'd you like to get out of this life? And they said, I'd really like to, but I think it's so hard. And we would say, yeah, it's very hard, but come and try anyway. And they would, and they'd make it.
Yeah.
I just had coffee 2 weeks ago with a woman who, when I first met her, she was an addict and a prostitute. She has now been a community leader for 40 years. She's been clean and sober for 40 years, okay? Yeah. She's not an exception. There are millions of people who turn their lives around, but the harm reductionists, in my opinion, want to keep addicts enslaved.
Hey, David, I want to pick up on that, and I know we're fast running out of time. We probably are out of time, but I really don't care at this point. The decision by the Supreme Court of Canada has really pissed me off and a whole bunch of other people. And you know, here at Roadkill Radio and a few other of my little activities, you know, we've got quite a large group of people that are motivated to bring some sanity back to our insane world. You know, turn Canada back into some form of civil society, you know, where you can speak truth, you can tell it like it is, you can be honest with people, you don't pacify them into oblivion by giving them drugs and all the rest of it. And besides which, I'm really cheap and I'm tired of my tax dollars going to create problems for people. I just have a problem with that.
Do you want your tax dollars to spend $8 million over the next 3 years giving free heroin to 322 heroin addicts?
Well, it's not going to be
Salome Project.
It's not going to be my tax dollars. It's my grandkids now.
That's right. That's Salome and Naomi Project out at UBC by the crazy psychiatrist.
Okay, so what do we do at this point? Let's say I've got about 12,000 people at your disposal. What do you want us to do?
I want everybody I have two answers to that. I want everybody to send an email or a snail letter or a phone call or all of the above to the Premier, the Prime Minister, the Ministers of Health. Also send that email to 10 of their best friends, to their neighbors. Let's be very clear about something that's happening demographically, and it's this. There are a handful of people, academics, politicians, wheeler dealers, some mistaken doctors and nurses, who are carrying on and on about harm reduction. By the way, harm reduction is now taught at universities.
Mm-hmm.
You can study harm reduction. I don't mean sort of intellectually. You can study to be a harm reductionist. Academics love this, and some policymakers love it. There's a small coterie of people who are totally supportive of this madness. But you and I and your 12,000 listeners are far from a minority. In fact, I had a talk show host yelling at me that I was in a minority, which I thought was funny. From my years of doing talk radio, I would say that 99% of everybody I've ever talked to and everybody I know believes as we do, that we want effective prevention and treatment. We want to at least have a public position of clean and sober is what we want everyone to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that we'll do whatever we can to bring people there. Please understand this. 3 years ago, Holyrood, the government of Scotland, after 10 years of harm reduction, made a huge public policy decision and announced it. They said they were putting no more money into harm reduction because it was a failed effort, and they were putting all their money into prevention and treatment. And believe me, Edinburgh and Glasgow and Scotland have huge drug problems just like everybody else does. So,
and they're trending that way in Amsterdam too, if you can believe it. They're rolling back some of the stuff in Amsterdam
good.
too. But we have to wrap it up, David.
Okay, David. So in the email, do you want it just short and sweet, like quit spending my money on this insanity? We want clean, sober people. We don't want to be facilitating drug use. What do you want them to say? Just end the insanity.
I would say the message is, please spend my tax dollars on prevention and real treatment. Treatment works. Harm reduction and insight do not work. They do not contribute. They are enablers. Please stop spending my money that way. Put the same money into signs of hope.
Signs of hope.
Yeah, because that's what prevention and treatment are. They're about hope. They're about dignity. They're about really caring about people. And all this other stuff is bizarre, ugly. Can you imagine there's a guy at UBC who believes, and he's considered a world expert, he believes that giving 322 heroin addicts free heroin for 3 years is going to accomplish something?
David, I'm putting this under a program that we have with an organization that I head up called Culture Guard, and we have a whole campaign on Stop the Insanity, and this is going to be right up there on the top.
Love it.
All right. Thanks so much, David Berner.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
Okay. I adore that man.
He's a great guy.
You know, and how refreshing, how just, you know, I don't know if we'd want him to be king for the day. You are living dangerously on that. Well, maybe for a day. You think we'd be safe for a day?
Well, if he was king for the day, he'd need me as his top advisor.
Okay, and so there's some safety measure put into that. There's harm reduction in that.
That would make a lot of people happy.
Great show, Mark. And you were the one that first introduced Roadkill Radio to the good work of David Berner. I knew David from his other life. This man wears many, many, many hats.
Yep.
I was unfamiliar till I heard your show with him, and that was after the symposium or conference that you attended
on
what's the best way, because this is a big debate within the drug industry, and this is part of the industry on whether abstinence works or whether we help people or they're a combination of. But David, I didn't know how many years he had been involved in saving people's lives.
And he mentioned hope at the end, and that's what it's all about. It's about hope. It's about giving people back their dignity and not the soft bigotry of enablement that takes place in the downtown east side.
And, you know, I want to just end this because I know this is gone on, but this is an important show, people, and we do take free license to continue on when good information has been given. Please pass this show on to 5 or 10 of your friends. Everybody is paying for this. If we don't nip this now, we will have an insight near every one of you. And again, this is a billion, multi-billion dollar industry. $8 million going to the heroin project now.
Yeah.
So at what point do you reach into your pockets and find that you have no money left? And will that then convince you that we need to be doing something on this, people? Again, we all have a responsibility in this. We have a responsibility to help those who need it. But when we give them help, let's make sure that they have a life at the end of it.
Amen.
All right. Mark, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, Carrie.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.